Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 57 at 16,639. The S&P 500 down 3 at 1,948. NASDAQ Composite up 8 at 4,590. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 7 basis points to 1.76%. Oil down 29 cents at $32.79 per barrel. Gold down $10.90 at $1,222.80 per ounce. For the week, the Dow Industrials added 1.5%, S&P 500 gained 2%, NASDAQ up 1.9%. The S&P 500 has rallied about 6.5% since reaching a 22-month low February 11th. It remains lower by more than 4.5% for the year. The dollar strengthened for a third day versus the yen, while yields on 10-year Treasury notes topped 1.75%, and oil capped the biggest weekly gain since August with a 10% move. China's central bank said it sees room for monetary easing. Chinese markets were up over 1% after a big 6% drop Thursday. The MSCI All-Country World Index rose 0.1%, while the Stoxx Europe 600 Index rose 1.5%. Gold posted a consecutive weekly drop for the first time this year. Finance ministers and central bank governors from the world's leading economies have gathered in Shanghai to discuss a response to the global economic landscape. Among the many issues facing them is the plunge in commodity prices, market volatility, exchange rates, and the slowdown of China's economy. G20 participants will try to agree on a coordinated stimulus program that could stop a global slowdown from turning into something worse. But meetings of the world's 20 leading economies have a long history of disappointing, and analysts see little reason why this one should end differently. German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble was quick to pour some cold water on hopes for extra stimulus, saying that the global economy needs reform, not stimulus. Zero interest rates are not doing enough to stimulate flagging economies, while negative interest rates may well do more harm than good because potential depositors might prefer stuffing the money under the mattress rather than paying to park it at a bank. But don't assume that will stop central banks trying to stimulate demand and raise inflation. The most likely option, helicopter money. But what form will it take? Well, one possible option is probably a direct monetization of government debt. The state could create infrastructure bonds to finance public works programs, and those could be bought directly by its central bank and then canceled. Instead of adding to the national debt, the bonds would simply be written off. U.S. economic growth slowed in the fourth quarter, but not as sharply as initially thought. Gross domestic product increased at a 1% annual rate instead of the previously reported 0.7% pace. The economy grew at a rate of 2% in the third quarter. There will be another revision in about a month, but as it stands now, GDP expanded 2.4% for all of 2015. The value of inventories increased. The largest contributors to the upward revision to inventory investment were retail trade and mining, utilities, and construction. Investments in new housing jumped. Exports fell. Consumers and businesses both cut back on spending toward the end of the year, and that is not a good sign for an increase in growth. We also learned that consumer purchases rebounded and climbed 0.5% in January. That's the biggest increase in 8 months. Disposable income, or the money left over after taxes, rose 0.4% for a second month after adjusting for inflation. The savings rate held at 5.2%. Turns out there's still some life left in the consumer. And we are seeing some signs of inflation. The PCE, the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, increased 0.4% in January, compared with an increase of 0.2% in December. The January PCE price index increased 1.3% from January a year ago. The January PCE price index, excluding food and energy, the core rate, increased 1.7% from January a year ago. Now, that's still short of the Fed's 2% target for inflation, but the jump in prices makes it more likely that members of the policy-making Federal Open Market Committee who meet in March will continue to raise interest rates. Federal Reserve Governor Lael Brainard said today that the market has been doing the Fed's job for it, as tightening financial conditions in the U.S. over the past year and a half have reached the equivalent of 3/4 percentage point interest rate hikes. Meanwhile, Federal Reserve Governor Jerome Powell, speaking in New York today, said, "A data-driven committee making decisions meeting by meeting is likely to surprise markets from time to time." In a separate report, Commerce Department said the trade gap widened in January, largest level since June. The seasonally adjusted trade gap widened to $62.2 billion from $61.5 billion in December. University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index for February came in at 91.7. That's up from a preliminary reading of 90.7, but it's down from 92 in January. Warren Buffett will release his annual letter to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders this weekend, following another lackluster year that saw the conglomerate's stock price lag the broader market. According to Doug Cass, head of Seabreeze Investment Partners, his underperformance is getting conspicuous, and he must address it. There are 12 stocks in Berkshire Hathaway's largest 15 holdings, including American Express, Wells Fargo, and IBM, that are altogether down and by a sum of nearly $13 billion over the past 12 months. Another lingering question, who will take over in coming years, given that Buffett is 85 years old and second-in-command Charlie Munger is 92? Short sellers are piling into energy stocks as oil prices struggle to recover and expected debt default rates climb. The level of energy shorts on the S&P 1500 as a percentage of float, or those available for selling, is at 12.5%, approaching the 13.45% level financials saw heading into the crisis of July 2008. Short interest for energy is at the third highest level of any sector dating back to 2007. Among the hardest hit individual companies are Transocean, 36.3% short interest on shares outstanding, Chesapeake Energy, 35.3%, Consol Energy, 28.8%, which saw a 20% gain in short interest during the most recent two-week filing period, according to FactSet. The companies represent the second, third, and fourth most shorted on the S&P 500. Meanwhile, the non-energy company GameStop, that's the most shorted, 37.7%. The energy sector down about 4% year-to-date, nearly 26% over the past 12 months. Halliburton is cutting about 8% of its global workforce, about 5,000 jobs, pressured by the downturn in crude prices. Halliburton has already reduced its global headcount by 25%, or about 22,000 employees, since 2014. Halliburton is awaiting regulatory approval for its acquisition of Baker Hughes, and the company said last month it still has not reached an agreement with U.S. and European regulators about the adequacy of proposed divestitures. The UK's Royal Bank of Scotland reported its eighth annual loss, $3.8 billion loss, due primarily to litigation over mortgage-backed securities. That said, the fourth quarter of the majority state-owned British bank bailed out during the 2008 financial crisis wasn't nearly as bad as the previous year. Republic Airways has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, blaming several quarters of falling revenue after having to ground aircraft following a pilot shortage. The carrier, which feeds flights to American Airlines, Delta, and United Continental, listed assets of $3.6 billion and $3 billion of liabilities. Republic said the bankruptcy process would allow it to continue normal business while restructuring its finances and contracts. Hilton Worldwide Holdings confirmed plans to spin off most of its hotels into a real estate investment trust. The REIT will include about 70 properties, mostly upscale assets in the U.S. and internationally. Hilton owns or leases 147 hotels around the world. The properties, which include hotels under the Hilton and DoubleTree banners, could be worth more than $10 billion. Dow Chemical said it agreed to pay $835 million to settle an antitrust case that was on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court in the wake of Justice Antonin Scalia's death earlier this month. Dow said the accord will resolve its challenges to a $1.06 billion jury award to purchasers of compounds for urethanes. That's a chemical used to make foam upholstery for furniture and plastic walls in refrigerators. Dow Chemical had disputed a jury's finding it had conspired with four other chemical makers to fix urethane prices and asked the Supreme Court to take the class action case on appeal. Scalia, one of the court's most conservative members, had voted to scale back the reach of such group suits. A week after the ruptured natural gas well in Aliso Canyon in California was finally declared sealed, we have a full account of the environmental damage. It does not look good. A new paper published in the journal Science declared it to be one of the largest environmental disasters in U.S. history. In total, 97,100 metric tons of methane were released into the atmosphere over a course of 112 days, equal to the greenhouse gas emissions of over 500,000 cars. The Oscars are this weekend, and everyone is a winner. Just for being nominated, attendees will receive a gift bag with a retail value of $232,800 worth of free swag, if they want it. Don't thank the Academy. The swag bags aren't about rewarding nominees. They're an advertising opportunity for interested companies handed out by a marketing firm called Distinctive Advantage. The items are all donated by the companies, which pay for the privilege, and this year's bag is the biggest ever at more than $250,000 in retail value. As always, we invite you to follow along live streaming audio at moneyradio.com and archived audio at the daily blog. That's eatthebankers.com. You'll find text, audio, author interviews, a free podcast, and much more at eatthebankers.com. 20 minutes after the hour, time for the 420 break, and we'll be right back with more of the review.